Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. 50 years ago, this November 22nd, President John Fitzgerald Kennedy was shot while traveling in his motorcade through Dallas. Kennedy was pronounced dead at 12:30 p.m. Central that day, which was a Friday. By Monday, 45,000 letters of condolence had arrived at the White House. 2 months later, the count rose to nearly 800,000. Addressed mostly to Jackie Kennedy and her family. Over the next 2 years, that number doubled. Handwritten, typed, and cabled, these letters captured the collective grief of the nation and the world, and were then filed away for nearly 46 years.
Dear Mrs. Kennedy, my deepest sympathy on the tragic...
My dear Mrs. Kennedy.
If I could take away the sorrow...
I wish so...
Dear Mom and Dad... Now that all the tragedy is over.
Dear Mrs. Kennedy.
I pray to the Almighty.
Dear Mrs. Kennedy. I am but a humble.
Dear Mrs. Kennedy. We were graduated from Rutgers University in 1950.
Dear Mrs. Kennedy and the Kennedy family. In your moment of supreme sorrow, I would like to express my sincere sympathy and unofficially that of the students of St. Olaf.
Those are just some of the contemporary actors reading those letters for a television special coming up on TLC this Sunday, November 17th. Those letters were originally compiled by the scholar, UNH history professor, and author Ellen Fitzpatrick in her 2010 book called Letters to Jackie. And Ellen Fitzpatrick joins us now on the line. Ellen, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you very much.
So the question that became the question, Ellen, where were you when Kennedy was shot?
Well, I was 11 years old, and I was in school in the sixth grade in Amherst, Massachusetts, and we were being given a tour of our school's library, and I noticed that the teacher and some of the librarians were gathered around a radio, and I heard them discussing news that was breaking, that there had been a shooting in Dallas and that President Kennedy's motorcade had been fired upon. And I remember thinking at the time that I instantly believed this because my parents that morning over the morning newspapers had been discussing President Kennedy's trip to Dallas and concern that he might be met with crowds that were less than enthusiastic about him. There had been an incident about a month earlier when Adlai Stevenson had given a speech in Dallas and had been roughed up a little bit by some demonstrators there. So that was where I was, and that's how I heard.
How did you embark on this project, going through all these letters of condolence to Jackie?
Well, I stumbled upon these letters while I was doing research at the Kennedy Library on an entirely different project. And as I headed down to the library that day, I was trying to think about sources that I might look for in the manuscripts that would show how Kennedy seemed as president to Americans in the moment of his presidency. That is, there's been so much written about him since his death. We know a great deal more, of course, about his private life, his medical situation. There have been numerous historical accounts that revise the initially very laudatory and kind of uniformly praising accounts of his administration, that I wanted to kind of peel those layers back and look back to 1963. It just popped into my head. I remembered sitting with my parents, seeing Jacqueline Kennedy thank the nation for the first 800,000 letters she had received, and that was about 8 weeks after her husband's assassination. It was her first public appearance. She appeared very briefly on national television and gave about a 2.5-minute talk, and I remembered that, and I went into the library and asked the archivist if they had kept any of the condolence mail, and they had, and I began to read it, and I was astonished at how rich the collection was.
Do you remember the first one that you read?
I do remember that because it was from a family of Eskimos who lived in Alaska, and they actually could see Russia from their house, and they were writing to say that they felt safer with John F. Kennedy in the White House, and so they were expressing their condolences to her. And then I turned the page, and I was just completely stunned by the diversity of the letter writers, that this was a collection that caught in real time. There were people who wrote letters even before they knew that President Kennedy was dead. They had heard an initial report on television that there had been an incident in Dallas, that President Kennedy was in the hospital. And some people sat down at that moment. The first letter, in fact, in Bill Couturier's documentary is from a woman who says, you know, nothing has been confirmed as yet. Either way, it turns out, you have my deepest sympathy. So the immediacy of these letters and the diversity of the writers was absolutely extraordinary.
As you mentioned, the diversity, you know, school children, grandmothers, widows, widowers, many particularly moved by the president's support for the civil rights movement. Here's a segment from one letter. This is from Henry Gonzalez, read here by Damian Bashir.
Your husband and I were both of the same age. I, too, having been born in 1917. We both were in the South Pacific area during the last war, but I was no hero as for him. We both married in 1953, and my wife is the same age as you are. I am not ashamed to say how terrible we all felt at this tragedy. So our heart goes out to you and your very dear children for always. Please try to find in your heart that we Texans of Mexican descent had a great love for all of you.
Ellen, it strikes me that a lot of people writing these letters sound as if they've lost a member of their own family. To what do you attribute this kind of familiarity with the first family?
You know, you're right. That's precisely what people said over and over again, those exact words. I feel as if a member of my own family has died, or I am as sad as I would be if, you know, my own parent, son, brother died. And I think the part of that has to do with the fact that John F. Kennedy was in the White House, was president at a unique moment in American history. I suppose that could be said of all presidents, but in his case, he was really our first television president. And therefore, the country came to feel as if they knew him very well. Kennedy gave over 60 press conferences during the 1,000 and some odd days of his presidency. There was extensive coverage of Kennedy by electronic media and certainly print media, of Kennedy, his beautiful wife, his adorable two young children, who, by the way, were the youngest children of any first family in the modern era, being raised in the White House at a time when the World War II generation was raising the baby boomers. And so there was an incredible interest and fascination with this vivacious young family and with this very charming, articulate young president. And there were none of the downsides of television coverage that presidents endure today with the 24-hour cable news cycle and the blend of opinion, criticism, and reportage that characterizes it. So Kennedy reaped these extraordinary benefits of TV and mass media without the less appealing for the president side of it. There was really nothing much written about his medical condition. All of that came out after his death, that he was not, in fact, as healthy as he appeared to be. His private life was off bounds under the existing journalistic mores of the time period. So it was really kind of a unique moment, and it created, I think, a sense of intimacy with this young president that, in any case, any president, there would have been a profound reaction. But I think in this case, his youth the tragedy of this. The young widow he left, Mrs. Kennedy, only 34 years old, these two very small children. There was a powerful sense of identification.
We're talking about the response and letters from ordinary Americans to Jacqueline Kennedy in response to the assassination of her husband, John F. Kennedy. The historian and author Ellen Fitzpatrick is with us. She compiled hundreds of those letters in a book called Letters to Jackie. TLC is broadcasting a documentary based on those letters and the book this weekend. We'll pick up our conversation with Ellen after a short break. This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. Welcome back to Word of Mouth. We're speaking with UNH professor and historian Ellen Fitzpatrick about a special that'll be airing on TLC this weekend based on her 2010 book called Letters to Jackie. Fitzpatrick pored over thousands of condolence letters written to Jackie Kennedy after her husband's assassination, but that was only a fraction of the letters sent to Mrs. Kennedy. Ellen, we learn in your book that 1.5 million letters in total were sent to Jackie Kennedy and her family. How many of those are still in the archives, and what happened to them in the intervening 46 years after they were tucked away and you discovered them?
Well, a couple of things happened. Some of them apparently were stored off-site before the Kennedy Library was built, and they were damaged by in a rainstorm, or so I've heard. What the archivist also did was, in this pre-digital age, they felt that there were too many letters to store in the Kennedy Library. They would just take up too much space. So a team of archivists went through the collection, and they saved representative letters in the sense that they saved a lot of letters from children, they saved letters from adults, they saved letters from VIPs. They saved all of the foreign mail, virtually. And it wasn't a culling operation that went beyond that. They also saved, importantly, 3,000 letters that had not been examined at all, so that some future historian, me, could compare the culled collection to the raw inflow of letters, and there was really no difference between the two. So there are about 15,000 letters from Americans in the collection now, and many more, I think, in the foreign mail, but I focused on the letters from Americans.
I'm wondering, Ellen, how you went through all these. What was your criteria? What were you looking for?
Well, from the very first day that I began working in the collection, it was clear to me that these were letters that really deserved to be brought to light. And they separated themselves very naturally into three categories. That is, there were a lot of letters from people who talked about November 22nd, 1963, where they were, what they were doing when they heard the news. There were some people who were on the parade route. There were people who had seen President Kennedy literally seconds, minutes before he was killed. There were people who had been at Love Field and had shaken his hand and Mrs. Kennedy's hands at Love Field when they arrived in Dallas. And then you could see, as you read the letters, just the news rippling across, you know, big cities, small towns. It was absolutely extraordinary. The second set of letters were letters in which people talked in an interesting and, I thought, revealing way about how they viewed Kennedy and the state of the country and what they thought the problems of our nation were in 1963. And those were fascinating letters as well. So they were really more about politics, about society, about their views of the presidency. And then a final set of letters were what one might expect in a condolence letter, as one does. These were letter writers who attempted to console the First Lady and to use their own experiences of grief and loss to help her through this terrible tragedy that she was living through. They talked about how they had overcome terrible tragedies in their own lives. There were letters from people who had lost family members to gun violence. There were many letters from widows who had been left with young children. So those were also very touching and very moving letters.
Here's an example of one of those letters of identification with loss. The actress Allison Janney here reading Mrs. John J. Wiley's letter to Mrs. Kennedy.
My deepest sympathy on the tragic loss of your husband. If I could take away the sorrow and the pain, I would, but I can only share it. On April 25th, 1963, I received a letter from your husband expressing his sympathy on the loss of my husband, an officer aboard the USS Thresher, which sank April 10th, 1963. May I quote a few lines from that letter, as I'm sure you will find consolation from his words. It is a sad fact of history that this price of freedom must be paid again and again by our best young men in each generation. Your husband has joined the other defenders of this nation who have given their lives.
Bill Couturier, who is the veteran film director who's directed the special that will be on TLC this weekend, he's known for finding historically significant correspondence from ordinary citizens. He did soldiers' letters from Vietnam and Iraq. And so it sounds like the right kind of pairing. But he made some interesting decisions making this film. There is a highlight reel of sorts of significant moments in President Kennedy's administration leading up to Dallas, but he does not use that famous or infamous Zapruder film.
I completely concurred with that decision, and I thought it was a very good decision to make. The Zapruder film is a terrible thing to see. It has been widely shown. It's available on the internet. And if somebody wants to see, the murder of a president, it's available to be seen. But I think that what Bill was trying to do in his film and what I tried to do in my book was not to focus on the death itself, but to focus on the impact of this death of a president on the American people. We've had decades, five decades, of thousands of books and articles and films and what have you, about President Kennedy's murder and many theories about what lay behind it, those who reject the findings of the Warren Commission. There's an entire industry devoted to that. But far less attention has been paid, and ultimately I would say that, that has not yielded a single finding that everyone can agree upon. But something that we could have known and that we did have potentially access to and that was worth studying was the impact of this event on Americans, on American citizens. That was knowable. And that is really the focus of my book and of Bill Couturier's film.
We're going to be hearing an awful lot about the Kennedy assassination in the next couple of weeks. I know you're going to be talking on news outlets and you're a frequent guest on the PBS NewsHour. Of all the questions you'll be asked, of all of the various different angles that will be explored, what do you think these letters add to our understanding of that day and its legacy?
I think that what they show is the way that an entire generation of Americans felt that, in some sense, this was a historical event that reached into the lives of ordinary people, and they felt personally a sense of loss that many of them said, I will never be the same again. They lived through a cataclysmic historical event, in their view, and life and their view of their country could be divided into before and after by this event. Of course, some of that sense receded in time, but there was a wonderful letter from a woman who wrote and said, "This generation has a deep scar on our hearts, which we will carry to our graves." And I think that that is what is captured in these letters. And in that sense, I think the letters themselves are quite significant. In addition, there is a kind of decency that comes through in these letters and a wisdom from so-called ordinary Americans that I think any encounter with these messages, you walk away from it feeling that the founders of our country, who put political power in the hands of average so-called citizens, believed that wisdom and virtue lay there and you really have that sense of those qualities when you read these messages.
Professor Fitzpatrick, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Ellen Fitzpatrick, professor of history at UNH and a scholar specializing in modern American political and intellectual history. Her most recent book is Letters to Jackie, Condolences from a Grieving Nation. It's a compilation of 250 letters Jacqueline Kennedy received after the assassination of her husband. A documentary based on Fitzpatrick's book premieres on November 17th on TLC. You can watch a preview of the special at our website, wordofmouthradio.org. You can also follow us on Facebook and on Twitter.
His killing had no purpose, no reason.